genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstormin' with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the Internet at brainstorminonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is exploding myths. All of my guests will expose or explode a myth we currently want to believe. My first guest is a leading authority on China and the Chinese economy. She'll tell us about the burgeoning Chinese middle class and what it means for the United States. Along the way, she'll explode some commonly held myths about modern China. My second guest is the junior U.S. Senator from Massachusetts. He'll open himself up to discuss his early childhood and how it formed him, and we'll talk about his memoir, Against All Odds. My third guest is the former U.S. Senator from Tennessee. He's also an actor and a radio show host. We'll discuss his memoir, Teaching the Pig to Dance. And my final guest is a magician, an author, a lecturer, and much more. He'll turn his skills towards exposing frauds and myths commonly perpetrated against us. And if you want to join in the conversation for any of my guests, you can call me at 639-0008. Helen Wang is an author, a consultant, and an expert on China's middle class. Originally from China, Wang lived outside of the United States for more than 20 years. After finishing her master's degree at Stanford University, she worked in Silicon Valley, holding a variety of jobs from consultant to Fortune 500 companies to entrepreneur at an internet startup. A Forbes contributor and a sought-after speaker, Helen has divided her time between consulting for companies doing business in China and helping nonprofit organizations make a difference. Welcome to the show, Helen. How are you today?
Good. Thank you for having me again.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. China is just a subject that is too big. We need to get our arms around it. We want to make sure that we understand both the opportunity and the risk that is there in China. And just to let people know some of the amazing factoids about China, China will have 200 cities with more than 1 million residents. And that's amazing when you consider in the United States we only have 9 cities with over 1 million residents. Mm-hmm. The middle class in China, if it continues on this pace, will grow from where it is today, 300 million people, to 800 million people by the year 2025. But besides all of that, there's a lot of mystery that sort of surrounds China as well, a lot of misconception, and I'm glad you're on the show. You'll help us debunk some of the misconceptions about it. But let's start with your book, which is titled The Middle Class, Chinese Middle Class, the China Dream, The Rise of the World's Largest Middle Class. You write that there are 5 truths about rising the Chinese middle class. What are those 5 truths, and how can we turn those threats into opportunities?
Okay, you know, the 5 truths I said is, first of all, you know, Chinese middle class, the number sounds very big, and it is big, and a lot of people, when I first started writing this book, people didn't even believe there was a middle class in China, but today, as we know, the Chinese middle class is already larger than the entire population of the United States, and so those numbers are real. And the first of all, the second of all, you know, the Chinese middle class is creating enormous opportunities for American businesses. And we have seen so many American companies are doing well in China. For example, Nike's revenue growing, you know, double digit, where their home revenue stagnated. And GM is the largest automaker in China now. Their sales number ranked number one in China. And a lot of Chinese consumers, they really favor American brands because the quality and the reputation. And also because, you know, somehow Western products help elevate their social status, which is very important for Chinese people because they are very much, you know, status conscious.
All right. Now, Helen, let me stop you right there and just continue on some of the lines of thinking that you talked about with the opportunities. Not only does General Motors sell more cars in China than it does in our home country of the United States, but it's also the greatest opportunity for General Motors. Kentucky Fried Chicken is the largest food franchise in China right now. They're going gangbusters there. You mentioned that there's a certain amount of status or cachet about having American products, which I think is true, and I think that that's great. But what about this problem that's endemic in China of the knockoffs? As soon as a good product, whether it's a Nike sneaker or something else, comes into China, it immediately gets knocked off. I've been to Beijing. I have been to Shanghai. I've gone on the street where I can see people vending, you know, CDs that are just now out in the United States, they're being sold in China for like $2. So talk to me about that.
Well, yeah, definitely there is, you know, a lot of those knockoff stuff going on. And but as a Chinese, you know, middle class, especially if they think they consider themselves classy, they want the real stuff. And it doesn't seem like this, you know, this affect the real brand. I mean, of course, knockoff always, you know, they sell such a low price. But on the other hand, people from those companies, they seem to know, they say they're always, like, for example, Louis Vuitton, and they are doing so well in China. They know there is, you know, knockoff Louis Vuitton out there, but it didn't quite affect their sales.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So the knockoffs, while it's important, it is not affecting their sales, partly because the Chinese middle class wants the real McCoy. They want the real thing. And partly because it's just a part of doing business in China. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, the part of doing business in China. And also probably, you know, there's enough population. There are people didn't have enough money, so they still do buy knockoff. When I go to China, I bought a knockoff as well. Because it says, you know, look so real and the price so much less.
Oh, shame on you, Helen. We're talking to Helen Wang, author of the book, The Chinese Dream, The Rise of the World's Largest Middle Class. All right, Helen, so there are the five truths about the Chinese middle class. It's a big middle class, we know that, that there are opportunities in the middle class. What are some of the other truths about the middle class in China?
The other thing is really the Chinese middle class also create enormous challenges for environment. And think about it, and you know, if only 20% of Chinese people want to drive cars, it would cause a lot of damage to environment. As a matter of fact, China is already the largest polluter and the number one greenhouse gas emitter. And but this challenge also create a lot of opportunities and for innovation and you know, in solar industry and clean tech industry in general. And so that is another truth. And finally, I would say also the implication of the Chinese middle class for democracy. That's another thing. People in this country has a lot of a misconception about it. And but at this time, I see the middle class, you know, although the number sounds big, right, but compared with the Chinese population, there's still kind of a small percent of China's entire population.
Well, it's about a quarter of the Chinese population, isn't it, Helen?
Yeah, now at this point, it's about a quarter of the Chinese population. And but even, let's say, in 15 years, it reached to like 700 million or 800 million. It's still about, I think, 50% of China's population. So China will still have about 50% of population in the rural area and still have underdeveloped the rural area. So the notion of the middle class will push for democracy you know, is not so obvious at this time.
All right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there's a lot of information in those answers that you just gave me. But I want to come back to this whole issue of democracy. Mm-hmm. Do you think that China is going to be the next Egypt or the next Libya?
Okay. Well, I recently just wrote a column on Forbes regarding this topic, and at this time, it's very unlikely, and for several reasons. First of all, China, although China's still under this one-party rule, however, China doesn't have that dictator like a Mubarak, somebody like that. And at this time, Chinese leadership, since 2009, Chinese leadership has transferred the power from one cabinet to another very smoothly without, power struggle. And believe it or not, and President Hu Jintao ruled by consensus in China's standing committee of the Politburo. What's the word?
Politburo.
Politburo, yes. So that's one situation. Second of all, in general, because the phenomenal growth in the past few decades, and so many people, their life changed dramatically, and they are beneficiaries. A lot of people I talk to, they have now become the supporter of the government. They see government seems delivered, have done good job. But at least they see them their life changed so much better, improved. So they are not so keen at this time for any big revolution or things like that. And
all right. Now, Helen, let me stop you there and let me challenge you, because you say that the Chinese middle class sees that their life has been improved. But that is not a belief that's widely held in China. In fact, many people in the Chinese lower classes look and say, wow, look at the middle class. They've got so much more than we do. Things were much better when we were a true communist state. And I long for the old days when it was communism and everybody was taken care of. Yeah, things stunk, but they stunk then, they stink now. I'd rather go back to the old way of doing things. What do you say to that? And after all, the lower classes in China are still bigger than the middle class and the upper classes in China. Is there any truth to that?
Some people may have that kind of sentiment. There are always people like that, because there are, as I say, China's going through dramatic changes. And even people lower class are featured in my book. Now, at least they have hope. They have opportunity to move up. Although there's still a lot of, as you said, people in rural areas, they still have restrictions and have access to public education or healthcare, things like that. But at least now they can do something. Some entrepreneur, rural entrepreneur, actually pulled themselves up.
All right.
From the rural area. So even for the lower class, their life also, they see definitely improved. That is no question about. Yes, there are a lot of discontent. People, of course, see some people all of a sudden become very rich, and some people are still lagging behind. And of course, a lot of people didn't like that.
All right. One more follow-up question, Helen, if I can. And by the way, we're talking to Helen Wang, author of The Chinese Dream. And you mentioned the pollution as being a real problem, and it's going to be a huge problem and a growing problem at that. You also mentioned that China is not the next Libya or the next Egypt, so we're not going to see any regime change over there anytime soon. So the big question is, can a communist government deal with the industrial and the urban problems that China is faced with right now? Or will they sort of be forced to move to democracy simply because of the challenging nature of these problems?
Yeah, I think the Chinese government will sooner or later be forced into democracy. And as this couple years, having said all this, life changed, they improved everything. This couple years, since 2008, actually Chinese government regressed and tightened control, censored the internet and detained the dissidents. And the more Chinese government trying to control, the more it reveal how problematic Chinese society, can be. There's certainly a lot of, there are a lot of fears in government for the instability. They are so adamant obsessed with the stability because they know how the regime can fall, like, you know, like the Soviet Union. And so there's an increased control. But on the other hand, you know, recently there's a call for, you know, Jasmine Revolution, the protest, but it seems to fade away, and most people didn't participate. And a lot of people, you know, email me through the internet, basically says, you know, we had enough turmoil in China. We just want to have peace, have better life, to get on their life. So,
all right, we're talking to Helen Wang, everybody. Helen, and we got to remember, to put this in historical perspective, it's only been 22 years since Tiananmen Square. So that's, in Chinese terms, that's a very short period of time. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I wanted to change gears, if I can, with you, Helen, and explode another myth, because exploding myths is the theme for today's show. And that's the myth that China is the banker to the United States, that the Chinese are buying up all of our bonds, and that we are indebted to the Chinese, and if they were to ever decide not to buy our bonds or redeem our bonds, that it would send the United States into turmoil. Now, you're a writer for Forbes as well as a businesswoman yourself. Is there any truth to that myth?
Well, definitely that is another overblown fear. First of all, our national debt was $14 trillion, in, you know, the latest number I see.
Mm-hmm.
And the China's holding of our treasury bill, the new number came up is about 1.1 trillion. So Chinese hold less than 10% of the total national debt. And recently, economists, you know, study because recently Chinese start to decrease the buying the our treasury bill because, you know, they are concerned of you know, dollar is a depreciating asset. However, it didn't affect our interest rate. So economists, you know, is basically saying whether China buy or don't buy, or whether they want to cash out or not cash out, it didn't, so far, it hasn't affect our economy. Yeah, on the other hand, of course, China, we and China is this mutual hostage. You know, China has every interest want to hold the dollar value high because they, you know, otherwise, it will affect them very badly.
Their investments would go down. And we're going to have to leave it there, Helen. We've been talking to Helen Wang, author of the book, The Chinese Dream, The Rise of the World's Largest Middle Class. Helen, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your writings, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you can go to the Amazon, search The Chinese Dream, and you will find my book. And also, my book is part of my autobiography, and there's a lot of story about also my personal journey from China to this country to pursue my dreams. And also, you can go to the ChineseDreamBook.com.
ChineseDreamBook.com. Helen, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sure. Thank you for having me.